Morning. It's good to be with you today. Good to have several visitors with us. We're glad that you're here. Hope that you benefit from being here together, and we appreciate your effort to come together and worship God with us today. It's always an encouragement to have visitors come and be with us. We have been studying the last few weeks a series on the subject of Pharisees and some of the errors of the Pharisees. And it's certainly not our purpose just to bash the Pharisees. In fact, we have mentioned some of the things that they set out to do, and that was to apply the Word of God to their life. But you know, there are some negative things that are pointed out about the Pharisees, and Jesus has many things to say to them and about them. And many times his words are preceded by scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, is the way that the Pharisees could be hypocritical. And we don't want that to be part of our life, certainly, and that's one of the reasons why we want to study this. In the past few lessons, we've discussed an overview of the Pharisees and the fact that they had sort of a legalistic attitude toward others and the traditionalism that they put on par with the Word of God. And that's what we talked about last week, was some of the traditions that they had that they made equal with the law of God. But hypocrisy is a word that we certainly hear a lot these days, and many times people are labeled hypocrites. Whether or not that label always fits, you know, is up for debate. But hopefully, at the end of this lesson, we'll have an understanding of what being a hypocrite means. Simply stated, a hypocrite means to be a play actor. It means to be one thing on the outside and something else on the inside. In fact, that's what the word means, is a stage actor. It's play acting. It's wearing a mask. It's having a pretense or a facade. And so a hypocrite is simply one who pretends to be something that he or she is not. It does not mean it doesn't define one who makes mistakes. And sometimes people will equate the person that doesn't always live up to the standard of God is a hypocrite. And we'll say more about that as we go on. Nonetheless, being a hypocrite does not mean that one who makes mistakes or fails to live up to the law of God is automatically a hypocrite. But it's one who gives an outward impression without any kind of inward commitment. And so that's really what being a hypocrite means. You know, when I was growing up, and it seems like there was a period of time in the, you know, the past, you know, 20, 30 years where you would buy furniture and it really was not what it seemed to be. You know, there was a veneer over it, and so you looked underneath that and it was just chipboard or something. And today, when people look at furniture, you know, they can tell whether or not it's real because how heavy it is. Is it real wood is one of the things that people want to know. You want to know that when it comes to a floor. Is it veneer or is it hardwood? Because it appears to be something on the surface, but really underneath, it's not. Sometimes people that are going to sell a car, you know, one of the things that they will do is they want to clean it up. And so the engine may have 250,000 miles on it, and it burns oil, and the transmission is shot, and there's rust on the body. But somebody gets a hold of that and gets some Bondo to fill in those little cracks and dents, and they repaint it, make it look really good on the outside. But on the inside, you know, you have to go get that Carfax report, right? You have to go see if it's been in an accident before. You know, what is it really on the inside? So that's the way the hypocrite is. The hypocrite dresses up real nice on the outside religiously, but on the inside is full of sin and hate and corruption. And Jesus called out those who were this way. He called them whitewashed tombs. And a whitewashed tomb doesn't really need an explanation, that it's something that looks real pretty on the outside, but you know it's on the inside. It's full of dead men's bones. Or the cup, and Jesus compared the Pharisees to a cup that they clean up really nice on the outside, but on the inside needs to go back in the dishwasher because it's not clean. And so the hypocrite, you know, in a worship setting may be one that nobody else
looks any better than he or she. You know, they're the one that looks really good. But if you see them on the job, or in his home, or in some other venue doing business, or if you could see the thoughts in their hearts, you might be shocked. So sometimes things do not, you know, you can't always judge a book by its cover, right? You can't always judge what's in someone's heart based on what you see on the outside. And that certainly is Jesus' point in Matthew chapter 23 that we had read for us this morning. Matthew chapter 23, starting in verse 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and anise and cumin, and you have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others. And he also calls them blind guides, straining out a gnat while swallowing a camel. And so you notice here that they were very careful about tithing these herbs that were very, very small. In fact, I understand that these that are mentioned here were known for being very, very small. And so, you know, they must be wonderful people if they're taking the time to tithe and be very careful about counting out this very small amount of this or dealing with something that's minuscule. And so it must be very wonderful spiritual people. But Jesus says, no, that's not the point. They have, while they do this, they have no justice, no sense of justice, no sense of mercy, and their faith is not what it ought to be. And, you know, in this area of the country, we have gnats. I think Georgia may have more gnats than Alabama does. I remember a lot of gnats when I was growing up. And there's nothing worse to me than a gnat flying around your ear and you can't get rid of it. But, you know, hear how wonderful they are. They're straining at the gnat. Nobody wants to swallow a gnat, right? Most of you would not want to swallow a gnat, even if it had a lot of protein in it. So, you know, look at how sincere they are at doing this and how wonderfully detailed they are in straining at this gnat. But it says that they then swallow the camel. Also, Jesus says to them in verse 25, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the plate, and the outside may also be clean. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. And you also outwardly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and decorate the monuments of the righteous, saying, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have taken part with them in the shedding of the blood of the prophets. Thus you witness against yourself that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your fathers, you serpents, you brood of vipers. How are you to escape being sentenced to hell? So the text also says that they are straining the gnat, swallowing the camel. They build tombs for the prophets. They decorate their graves. And so what the implication here is that they are true lovers of God. You know, that they really respect the prophets. They want to honor the prophets. They're going to decorate their graves. But what's going on at the same time that they are doing these things? Well, they're plotting to kill the Son of God is what they're doing. You know, they're about to kill Christ, but they're saying that we honor the prophets of God. And so all of these illustrations that Jesus uses here, you know, really, you know, mock some of the fine tuning that they want to do in regard to, you know, keeping the cups clean and the other things that they've done that we've discussed, you know, the washing of the hands and being very minute in the things that they observe in the law. But there's some really, really big problems in their life. When I was in college, living in Ohio one summer, I left Ohio for a couple of weeks to work at a Florida college camp, and I thought I'd save some money by turning off the power in the apartment. And so when I got back home, I didn't realize that things in the refrigerator like to stay cold when I turned off the power. And so I open up the refrigerator. Well, what do I see? Well, you know, let's say that you just imagine what I saw when I opened up the refrigerator, what it smelled like. So I quickly close it, and I go get some spray paint and spray paint the outside of the refrigerator and get it looking real nice on the outside and shined up. And so now I've taken care of the problem, right? Because I've taken care of the way that refrigerator looks on the outside. It's all polished and beautiful. No, the inside is the problem, because what I left there's now more of it because it started to grow. You know, it's nasty. I wish you could all have seen it. But it was a big mistake on my part to have done that. But you see the foolishness of the example, that I would think by cleaning up the outside that the inside is going to get any better. And that is the point that Jesus is making here with the Pharisees. You're very conscious of taking care of these externals, of these things that everybody can see, but the inside is what the issue is. And he tells them what the true picture is in verses 25 through 28 here in Matthew chapter 23. You build these tombs and you decorate the monuments and say, you know, we would never have treated the prophets in the way that our fathers did. We would not have taken part in the shedding of blood. But he says, you're witnessing against yourself because of the way that you are behaving today. And you are not going to escape punishment because of your attitude. So let's look at some of the ways that we see in the New Testament that hypocrisy affected their behavior. One of the things that hypocrisy did is it affected their teaching. In Matthew chapter 5, Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verse 20, Jesus said, "For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." Well, that's a very stinging rebuke. And if you look at much of Matthew chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount, it really is a contrast between the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees and the righteousness which pleases God. You see Jesus making that contrast that you've heard it said, or you've seen this and that, and the way that others behave. You've heard other people say these things, but I tell you this. And so Jesus' standard is much higher than what the scribes and Pharisees would have, which is very ironic to them that it would be that way. For example, in chapter 5 of Matthew, verse 21 through 24, Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable for judgment.'" And that's true, right? That's what was written in the old law. That was very true. But Jesus says, verse 22, "But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, 'You fool,' will be liable to the hell of fire. If you are offering your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift." And so everybody knew that murder was bad, that murder was against the law. You shall not kill. And so that's the emphasis of the Pharisees, is that statement, "Thou shalt not kill." That emphasis is outward. But, you know, that outward, you know, manifestation is really a sign of an inward problem. And we see a lot of that today, don't we? When we see the things that have happened in this country that are violent, or shootings and things, that the outward act is not really the main issue. It's what motivated that. You know, what was the mental state of the person who did that? And you look for those things. There's always something else going on behind the scenes, you know, mentally or otherwise, that has caused that act. And when the Pharisees concentrate on the outward only, what Jesus is saying is, you've forgotten what the motivation for killing is. You know, the hatred of your brother is really the issue. You've heard it said, "Thou shalt not kill." The emphasis here is outward. So don't go commit that overt act. But Jesus goes beyond what's outward, and he points to what's inward. You need to be aware that there's some inward things going on that led to that outward act. The outward action here is the emphasis that Jesus teaches here. He also teaches the same lesson when it comes to morality and adultery specifically. If you read on in Matthew chapter 5, verse 27, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. So there again is the act of adultery, and it's true, you shall not commit adultery. Well, what leads to adultery? He says, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away, for it is better for you to lose one of your members than your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away, for it is better for you to lose one of your members than your whole body to go to hell. Again here, the outward action is emphasized by the Pharisees, but Jesus is saying there's something else going on inwardly in your mind. If you're looking at a woman in order to lust after her, you've already started the process of committing adultery. And he is making them aware that there's more to think about than just that outward action. There's a thought process that goes on that leads to that. So it really affects their teaching, the hypocrisy does, and Jesus corrects them on those things. It also affects their benevolence in the way that they treat others. In Matthew chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do, in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. So it's possible for people to be concerned about the poor and be compassionate. And it can be done for reasons to receive self-glory. Just the other day, I was hadn't been on Birmingham Southern's campus in a while. But that there's some buildings there that are named after people that I knew, people that worked for EBSCO. You know, there's Elton B. Stevens building, and that was the president of EBSCO. And you know, he was a very benevolent man, and I would not say that he, you know, donated to the school just so he could have a building named after him. But there are sometimes that people will do things in order to be seen. And so you go around a campus like that, and there's always names on the buildings, and it's interesting to find out, why did they have this building named after them? And usually it boils down to money, that they were somebody that donated money. It may be that they did something else significant that was going to be honored. But the point is that sometimes people will do things because this is what I'm going to get out of this. And many times when I was working at EBSCO, which is a printing company, we printed programs for the Alabama Symphony and other organizations where people donated a lot of money. And so we would sometimes have to reprint things because a donor's name was left out, or it comes back off of proof, and you know, this person that donated a lot of money, they didn't get mentioned in here, so we've got to take this page out and put another page in, because they're very careful about making sure that those who had done something benevolent would be recognized. And you can understand why they would want to pay tribute to someone who did something like that. Well, the Pharisees were very interested in receiving tribute. They were very interested in receiving recognition for the things that they did. And Jesus said that they had a kind of a warped sense of how important that should be. Because while they appeared to be concerned for the poor and to be compassionate people, Jesus said the only thing that they really want is the praise of men. And he warns them about that. Don't practice your righteousness before other people to be seen by them, for you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. When we were growing up in Columbus, Georgia, my sister almost died when she was born. When she took her first breath, one of her lungs collapsed, and so she was in intensive care for several days. So her life was very, very shaky there at the beginning. And there were a lot of older ladies in the congregation that over the years, and they just piled on praise on you. Oh, you know, you're so pretty today, and you're dressed so pretty. And and they were always fawning on her. And I guess she was probably 4 or 5 years old when we moved to Dothan, Alabama. And the first service that we went, and she got into the car and she just kind of huffed and said, "Nobody told me I was pretty today." And, you know, because she was so used to that kind of attention from the other place. And so, you know, my mom said she had to have a little talk with Jill about that you're not always going to get that kind of recognition, but, you know, we all think you're pretty. So the thing is that sometimes people will get used to praise, they'll get used to attention, and Jesus says you need to beware of wanting that. And sometimes we can be very guilty of that, of wanting that praise from others. And we need to be careful, because Jesus condemned the Pharisees for those who wanted the praise of men. And that is a primary cause of hypocrisy. That's really what motivates hypocrisy, is wanting to be seen to be good by others. It's that pride. It's that desire to impress people without really going to the trouble of what you ought to be. What you appear to be is the important thing when you're trying to impress somebody else. And so certainly that affected the way that they treated others and their benevolence. It also seemed to affect their praying. The Pharisees were condemned because they made a show of religion. And Luke chapter 12 and verse 1, Jesus said, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees." Well, what's the leaven of the Pharisees? Well, he said what it is, that it's hypocrisy. That you don't want to be affected by their hypocrisy. In a previous lesson, we already pointed out in Luke chapter 18, when Jesus talks about the two men who went into the temple to pray, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, "God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess." And you remember that account. Now, he doesn't ask God for anything. All he does is give God a list of all the things that God should be really impressed with. And then the publican, who the Pharisee just condemned by saying, "I'm glad I'm not like this guy over here," he would not lift up his eyes toward heaven, but said, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." He is the one who went home justified. So the Pharisee has this idea that I am good enough, but he was not properly evaluating himself, not evaluating his own heart. And so if the Pharisees had this attitude when they prayed, which they seemed to do since Jesus pointed it out, that, you know, they're just laying it on thick about how wonderful they are. And the illustration that Jesus uses here is this guy's doing this in the middle of the street, you know, loudly so everybody can hear him, and pile compliments upon himself. And that's not effective to be the kind of person that God would have you to be. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 16, it says it also affected their fasting. And fasting would be something that was done, you know, for dedicating your time and your energy and your attention to spiritual things. But Jesus said that when they did this, they did it and they wanted to make a big show out of it. When you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. And I don't know exactly what they did to make this happen, but it's obvious that they were trying to look withdrawn, or that they had done without, and that others would see outwardly what it is that they're doing. And Jesus said because they were doing this to be seen by others, that congratulations, you've got what you desired. You know, you have received your reward. It also affected the way that they interacted with others. In John chapter 8, verses 1 through 6, it says that Jesus went to the Mount of Olives early in the morning. He came to the temple. All the people came to him. He sat down and taught them. And the scribes and Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery and placed her in the midst and said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. So what do you say?" And they said this to test him, that they may have some charge to bring against him. And Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. I don't know what Jesus wrote on the ground. That's been a subject of much speculation. But here we have a situation that on the outside it seems that, oh, they're so concerned about the law. Here is one that has been caught in the very act of adultery. Number one, a couple of questions about that. You know, was she committing adultery by herself? No, that's not possible for her to commit adultery by herself. And so where is this other person that would have been caught in the act of adultery too? Both of them would have been guilty of the law. But here they brought her. So I don't really know why it is that they've singled her out and not the man with whom she's committing adultery. So if they're really concerned for the law, you know, why are they not, you know, getting both of them involved in this? But verse 6 really states their true intent. It says that they did this so that they could have some charge to bring against Jesus. What they wanted to do was to have Jesus be at odds with the law of Moses, to say that Jesus is a lawbreaker. Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 7 says, "The hand of the witness shall be the first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of all the people, so you shall purge the evil from your midst." And so it seems from reading Deuteronomy chapter 17 that if this was a case that the law should have if they should have stoned them, this should have been something that happened at the scene of what was happened, because it says that the witness, the one who witnessed it, is the one that should cast the stone, and then the others. But at any rate, whatever Jesus wrote on the ground caused them to be silent, and whoever was without sin could cast the first stone. So, you know, their law keeping and their hypocrisy, you know, caused them to react poorly to others. And in fact, another example of this is in Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22, verse 15. "The Pharisees went and plotted how to entangle him in his words. And they sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, saying, 'Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God faithfully, and do not care about anyone's opinion, for you are not swayed by appearances.'" But you see what's going on here? If you came to me and said, before service, "Randy, we know that you're true and that you're a good teacher and you teach the way of God truthfully. You don't care about men's opinions. You only want to teach what is true. And we're so impressed with you because you never judge according to appearance." But I feel all puffed up because you said those things about me. Well, you know, they're trying to puff up Jesus here, because you see what it says first, that they are plotting on how to entangle him with his words. And then they go to him and they say all these things they don't really mean. They don't mean any of that. Because they're trying to entrap him. And then they say, "Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" And of course, you know, Jesus' response to that did not help them in their case to entrap him. Because he said, "Render unto Caesar things that are Caesar, and unto God things that are God." So it just nullified that argument that they were hoping to have to entrap him in his words. But see, the thing that I want you to observe here is that they come up and they want to flatter Jesus. And you know, sincere compliments have a place, and it's certainly not wrong for us to compliment one another on whatever it is that may be admirable. But you know, flattery here, the way it's used, is hypocrisy. You know, they don't mean what they're saying. It's just a lie. You know, they're coming up and they're saying something to be seen as one who, "Oh yeah, we love you, we think you're great," and they didn't think that at all. When you look at Proverbs chapter 31 and you read about the virtuous woman, and you know, she is one that is described in such a wonderful way. And you know, that's not flattery. That's something that is something that we ought to try to embody in the lives of women. But the last verse of Proverbs chapter 31 says, "Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain." So all the things that are said that are complimentary about the worthy woman, you know, they are in fact things that are very positive. But you have to be careful because charm or flattery is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. So you see the contrast between the virtuous woman and this woman that is full of charm and deceitfulness. And so that is a contrast that needs to be made in our lives. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 9, Paul says, "Let love be genuine." And that's the opposite of hypocrisy. Something that's genuine is the opposite of hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. So these are some effects that hypocrisy had on the Pharisees. But what are some cures for hypocrisy? Sometimes when you talk about people in hypocrisy, some people only see two types of people. You are either perfect or you are a hypocrite. That's the way some people see hypocrisy. That if you are a Christian and say that you're a Christian and that you serve God, as soon as I catch you in a lie, or I catch you saying something that you shouldn't, or you did something that was unloving, you did something that was not consistent with being a follower of Christ, then you, my friend, are a hypocrite because you say that you follow God and you have failed miserably in this one or two points. So that's the way some people see hypocrisy, is that if you claim to follow God and you make any little slip up, then you're a hypocrite. And that's not what a hypocrite is. A Christian knows, or should know, that he is not perfect, and that he depends on God's grace for salvation, and that we're cleansed by the blood of Christ, and that we have no hope for salvation without that. We also know that we cannot deceive God, because while I may be able to put up a good facade and good front for many people, God is not going to be deceived by my outward appearance. Because God can know something about me that you don't know. God can know my heart. And God can know your heart. And sometimes people can know your heart because it eventually comes out, you know, that you know what's in your heart many times will not fool everybody for a long period of time. But the point is that regardless of how good a hypocrite you are, that you can't be successful at trying to fool God on anything. So if Christians claim perfection while not being perfect, then that would make every Christian a hypocrite, right? Christians do not claim to be perfect. They claim to be perfected and trying to live up to the standard that we have, which is to be like Christ. But I don't know anybody that actually can live up to that. So when the world sees an imperfect Christian, what they have seen is the attribute of every Christian, that they are all imperfect. And maybe some are more imperfect than others, but the point is that we're all imperfect. So being perfect or being a hypocrite is not the only two categories that you can be in. The cure for being a hypocrite is to be genuine, to be sincere, and to try to see that what one sees on the outside is what is on the inside. You know, for example, let's say that Sister Mabel, and we don't have a Sister Mabel here, but if we had a Sister Mabel and she's, you know, that Sister Mabel, she doesn't always come to services like she should. And, you know, she should be here. And so we're all going to talk about her and how lax she is on her attendance. But I'm here every time. But during the prayer, I'm thinking about the football game. And during the Lord's Supper, I'm sitting there, you know, writing down what all the bills are that I have to pay this week. And during the lesson, you know, I'm just struggling to stay awake because that preacher's so boring. And so, you know, I'm really rough on Sister Mabel, who's not here, but I'm here every service. But I'm doing everything else except worshiping God. But I am here present in the pew. Now, you see, you know, it's not excusing Sister Mabel, but here I am being the hypocrite because I'm being judgmental of the one that's not here, but I'm here, and that's all that I am. I'm just physically here, but I'm not mentally here, not mentally participating, not actually participating in worship. That's not sincere. That's not genuine. So the genuine person, you know, certainly doesn't claim to be perfect, but is striving to be perfect, is striving to be like Jesus Christ. When he comes to worship, you know, he or she's not a perfect worshiper. When he goes to the job, he's not claiming perfection, but throughout the day he conscientiously seeks to do God's will and tries to live by that in all their interactions with others and their dedication to their work. In the home, the relationship that the husband and wife have with each other and with the children and the responsibilities. You know, all these things go back to, here's what the Word of God teaches me. Am I really sincerely trying to do this? Or am I just trying to put on a show? When I'm conscious of sin in my life, do I try to cover it up? Or face up to it, correct it, and seek forgiveness? One of the things that the kids do from time to time when they're growing up is they play church. My dad used to do it in the big city of Belle, Florida, and they sat up a little thing in front of the fireplace, and he set up a little podium, and he would preach to his sisters. In fact, if you still go into that old house, you can still see chalk on the fireplace where he wrote out his points on the fireplace. And so they always kind of pointed that out, and they didn't ever clean that off because they wanted to remember him doing that. Well, they're playing church. But, you know, we're not playing church. You know, we're not playing Christian. This is not a game. It's not something where, you know, we're fulfilling a role and we're acting out something and hopefully everybody believes our performance. That's what a hypocrite does. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, in verse 8, Paul says, "Let us therefore celebrate the festival not with the old leaven, the leaven of malice and evil, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." Sincerity is a big thing. It's not the only thing. Sincerity and truth have to go together. But we need to be sincere in what it is that we're doing. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, as David is about to be selected as king and Samuel is being given instructions on, here's what you need to look for, and you're not going to be looking for what you think you're going to be looking for. He says, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." So we have to work to get rid of the veneer. We have to work not to be hypocritical as the Pharisees were, to clean ourselves up from the inside out. You think about King David and the sin that he committed with Bathsheba, the hypocrisy that was there as he tried to cover up the sin. And then Nathan comes. David's role as a hypocrite really ends there, because he said, "I am the man. I have sinned." What a relief David must have felt at that time when he's no longer in the cover-up business, but he's in the repentance business. Let's remember that a hypocrite is not simply someone who makes a mistake. That would make everybody a hypocrite, wouldn't it? Except Jesus. A hypocrite is one who professes one thing and practices another. Christian doesn't profess to be perfect, but he does profess to be trying to do what God said. And he professes to try to be trying to be like Jesus Christ. And if we're not sincerely trying to live by what we profess to believe, then, yeah, that's hypocrisy. Do you believe the Word of God? Are you sincerely trying to follow it? Or is it really a game to you? Are you trying to do this to be seen by others or to keep family and friends happy? Now, this is about having a relationship with God, because God can see what's on the inside. And many of the Pharisees were more concerned about the outside than they were the inside. And it wasn't pleasing to God, and certainly wasn't fooling God or Jesus, even though others may have been fooled by it. So I know these things are useful to us as we try to sincerely serve God from the inside out. And I hope this will be an encouragement to you. If we can help in any way to be obedient to the gospel of Christ, we'd invite you to come while we stand and sing.